welcome once again to another episode of SLMA Radio. Brought to you on behalf of the thousands and thousands of members of the Sales Lead Management Association. If it has to do with sales lead management or sales lead marketing, it probably starts here with the SLMA Radio Show. Today we're welcoming Mark Godley, our host for the Data Dump radio program, the show where you can hear top B2B data vendors and buyers discuss the reality of today's data landscape. Mark will help you navigate your busy buying decisions and enjoy a laugh along the way. Data Dump is sponsored by Lead Genius. So welcome, if you will, Mark Godley. Hey, Mark.
Thank you, Paul. Paul is our announcer today for the Data Dump Show. I'm excited to have Don Wins as our inaugural guest on the show. Don, happy to have you.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
Don, the reason I wanted to have you on board is as we get this this podcast off the ground, I wanted a luminary from the data space, someone that's well-known, a sage elder of the data business. And you came to mind. I don't know if you should be thrilled or horrified.
Well, I'm glad to see the gray hairs finally paying off with a little gravitas in my persona, so I appreciate that.
Little did you know you'd become an expert in this B2B data space when you started years ago. And speaking of starting years ago, for those who are listening in, why don't you give people a short version of your illustrious career?
Well, illustrious is certainly a relative term, but I certainly have been in the space for quite a few years. I go back into the previous century, being in the data space and really starting out in really the industry that was the first to really accept and rely on data to run their business, and that's financial services, and more specifically the trading, both equity and futures and fixed income traders who couldn't get through their day without real-time delivery of news, quotes. And that's where I first got started in this business, was overseas in Tokyo, Japan, working for a company called Knight Ridder Financial, delivering real-time futures contracts to traders throughout the Asia-Pacific region. That was fast and fun and kind of evolved from there, and then moved into corporate sort of data delivery in the 90s with a really interesting little company called NewsEdge, which was involved in and really the creator of real-time news delivery to the desktop.
And then from there, B2B data from a sales and marketing perspective. Do I have that right?
In the early days, the B2B data space was really heavily oriented towards the marketing function. I guess it really still is in terms of where you look at budgets today. But I got involved with several entities, Zoom Information, and now at HG Data. So spent many years at Zoom Info, coming on board at HG Data, where I am today, which is a fundamentally different B2B data set, but again, heavily geared towards the marketer in terms of effectively reverse engineering software and hardware companies' customer lists and identifying who's using what technology at what location in what time frame. It's been a long road, but I certainly have seen tremendous evolution in the data markets over the last 20, 25 years.
So that's a good segue into the topic I wanted to get into next, which is the evolution. How is data changed? How are buyers using data differently today? How are you seeing it different today, 22 years later?
Well, certainly the purchasing process has changed unbelievably. I mean, the complete disintermediation of IT in the procurement process is a fundamental change of this. And data companies now can really market their wares to the folks who are going to use that data to run their business units, as opposed to having to be reliant on an IT or an infrastructure entity within the organization to, you know, ingest and distribute that data process. Again, you can imagine circa 1995 running a copper wire for the last mile to deliver real-time futures and 9,000 pages of security documents and getting telecommunications companies to now engaging with the CMO on his or her specific data issues dealing with their budget in an SaaS environment, enabling that business person to take advantage of that data within 24 hours. So the time to value has been expedited at pretty much light speed.
And how about the sales process? How has the sales process evolved?
Yeah, I think like all things internet, the sales process, 70% of your buyer's decision has been made prior to you ever talking to them. The unbelievable transparency in terms of prospective buyers doing due diligence on data, whether they do that or not, they certainly have the ability to do so. But this transparency where now these end users are, if not data experts, certainly well-educated, and for some of the more data-centric verticals out there, obviously tech and financial services, insurance are up at the top. These folks know what they're doing. They know what they're after, and they know how to get it. And the day of a salesperson not being able to not only speak intelligently around the data asset they're representing, but if you don't know your prospects' business issues and problems, you're not going to sell that data set because they don't have time for it.
To play devil's advocate a little bit, or to stir the pot a little bit, do you think buyers are getting better at buying data? You know, I certainly sometimes scratch my head on some of the decisions I see out there.
Well, clearly, like I said, buyers have the ability to do their due diligence at scale on this. Well-educated buyers are out there, and they have the capabilities to do so. But by no means, whether it's bandwidth or the maturity of a company or the level of sophistication of the data products at that entity, it doesn't necessarily mean they're taking advantage of the inherent transparency in the industry. I oftentimes see folks taking offers up from data shops that are clearly offshore, that are pitching wares that, you know, are debatable at best in terms of their reliability. So there is certainly continues to be a certain naivete at some entities in terms of the data buying process, but the capabilities exist for that buyer to become a fairly sophisticated data expert on their own.
Well, and I think something you mentioned, you know, sparked one of my soapbox frustrations, you know, since I've been in the data space for the last 10 years or so, which is, I think as vendors, and both you and I work for vendors, I think we are massively contributing to the problem by claiming we're everything to everybody, not being direct about what we do poorly, what we do well, how we expect people to consume our deliverable. And this is all complicated by the fact that there has been an explosion of specialty data vendors. You look at Brinker's chart of just the MarTech sales tech ecosystem, and although I haven't seen one dedicated to data vendors specifically, we've grown to the point of confusion. Is this resonating with you, or have I become just a stodgy, crabby old bastard?
It's both, Mark. You are a crabby, stodgy old bastard, to be sure, but I think there's some validity in what you speak. I mean, look, the barriers to entry for nascent data companies are incredibly low, right, with cloud-based technologies and the proliferation of big data technologies. You know, you don't need to be a Dun & Bradstreet anymore to get into the data game. The barriers are low. The financial barriers to entry have dropped precipitously, and that means there's lots of people coming into the space. Now, you know, is there anybody benchmarking that, or is there anybody looking at a consistent level of data quality? No, by and large, no. And historically, the bar has been incredibly low in corporate data, not in the financial services area where these folks live, eat, and breathe on public company information, and it's right, and it needs to be right, and it is right. But once you move into sort of the marketing function, you know, there's new data sources that pop up constantly, and it is difficult to quantify the quality of a given data source without experience with that particular data source. So, yeah, there's a lot of us out there, and there's a lot of people, I think, making false claims out there, and it just screams to the corporate buyer world to make sure they're employing a certain level of due diligence on this before entering into relationships. I think everybody benefits from that. If you're a corporate data buyer and your prospective vendor is not sharing data with you, piloting data with you, benchmarking data with you, you got to close the door on them.
Yeah, I think that the elimination of barriers to entry to hang up a shingle and claim you're a vendor is, I hadn't thought about it like that, but I think that's a big part of it for sure. And certainly there's a lot of data out there, right? We're all carrying around these computers in our pockets that are just throwing off information left and right, that if someone can take those billions of bits and bytes of unstructured data and turn it into information, throw up a website and you're off and running, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it can be that simple and easy to get into the space.
Let's take a quick break to pay some bills, and we'll be back here in a minute.
And during that short minute, we just want to pose a couple of questions to you. How well do you know your total addressable market? Really? What are the most profitable micro segments of your audience? Who are all the decision makers at your ideal account? Stumped? Well, you shouldn't be, because Lead Genius can tell you. Lead Genius helps business-to-business enterprise companies such as Google, eBay, and Square power through their go-to-market strategies. Lead Genius has the highest quality contact and account data available anywhere, right now. How? Well, Lead Genius verifies every single data point with a unique combination of real human researchers and machine learning. The best of both. Quality is assured. Accuracy is 100% guaranteed, really. See for yourself why enterprise marketing and sales leaders trust Lead Genius. To learn more, simply visit the site. You can be a genius too. LeadGenius.com. Learn more about total addressable market today. Be a genius. Go check out LeadGenius.com. All right. Having said all that, let's pick it back up with our second half of our show.
And welcome back to the inaugural episode of the Data Dump with Don Wins, a very seasoned veteran of the space. You talked about sales buying versus marketing buyers a little bit before the break. The last two companies you've worked, ZoomInfo, you mentioned earlier, was largely contact-oriented. HG Data kind of brought to the fore this whole concept of technographic as a major way of categorizing companies and creating segmentation. That's obviously a company-level firmographic. Do you have any thoughts on selling contact data or buying contact data versus company-level data? Any insights there?
Obviously, the GDPR thing has had a massive influence and impact on the contact providers. It's a fundamentally different equation at this point, with a massive amount of compliance now being on top of the contact vendors, both B2B and B2C. You know, that had, you know, everybody wrapped up really. Well, for the procrastinators, you know, it was the last 90 days trying to get their arms around it. But for a lot of folks, it was months and months and quarters of time to get into a GDPR compliant type of a solution. And the fines and penalties are now so massive, you just can't afford not to comply with that. So clearly, you know, the firmographic data, the information at a, about a company, where I would also put Technographics, HG's product, in terms of tech installs, is ultimately a firmographic. It talks about a company. Clearly, the lack of personalization information, the lack of PII inherent in the firmographic data sales makes life a whole heck of a lot easier for those vendors because of the lack of sort of stringent privacy issues inherent in contact information. So, you know, I think ultimately, the cost goes back to the vendors in terms of validating their contact data, and ultimately that's going to be passed on to consumers of that data. But I think ultimately the increased quality inherent in that contact data is going to more make up for the increase in cost for those buyers.
Yeah, interesting. Well, listen, we don't have enough time to get into it in our closing minutes here, but I think GDPR is going to end up being a bit of a canard, at least from a B2B perspective. So I'll just throw out that scintillating prediction. And next time you and I have an opportunity to break some bread together, I'll give you my perspective on that a little bit.
As long as you're buying.
You got it. I'd welcome doing so. You know, we've gotten through about 16, 17 minutes. Neither one of us have brought up the most annoying acronym having been shouted out about for the last 2 or 3 years in the B2B sales and marketing space. Any idea what acronym I'm talking about?
I think it might be ABM, but I'm taking a leap of faith here.
ABM, absolutely. Can you believe it? That acronym aside, and you and I are both old enough to know that the whole concept of ABM and targeting was the way people used to do business a long time ago before there was the acronym. The pendulum swung to more of a mass market approach, and here we are. It's like locusts, plowing the field or consuming the field every 7 years. Now it's going right back to, this concept of, lo and behold, why don't you target your emails rather than just sending out millions of them expecting a PO to show up across your desk. My cynicism about ABM aside, talk to me about how data has played a part in either fueling the birthing of ABM or how ABM has fueled the growth of third-party data.
Well, ABM is a strategy. It's much like my leisure suit in my closet. I know it's going to come back into vogue someday. I just don't know when. Here's my experience with ABM, talking to lots and lots of marketers out in the marketplace. By and large, marketers are still measured by the number of marketing qualified leads that they generate for their sales organizations. Well over half of the folks I talk to saying it's MQLs, MQLs, MQLs. So now I'm being force-fed into an ABM model where by definition, the number of MQLs I generate are going down because I'm interacting with a smaller universe of entities, but with an inherent lift in the quality of those MQLs. So that's something I think the market needs to get its arms around. And I think, if anything, that conundrum has helped drive the creation of these new and disparate data sets in order for one, for folks to maximize the attributes by which they can identify ideal company in order to expand relevant targets to generate MQLs, which again are inherently limited when your target market has been decreased. So I think there is absolute linkage there, but I think marketing in general is not enthralled with the idea of ABM as long as at the end of the day their budgets are being based on MQLs generated. I think it's something the industry needs to get its arms around.
Yes, that's an interesting perspective. I was just talking to our marketing department earlier today, talking about where should we be putting our marketing dollars, top of funnel versus somewhere else. And I was making the point that I think middle of the funnel might actually be a much better use of those marketing dollars. So, forget about the concept of MQL, forget about the concept of a sales accepted lead. It was, let's influence improving our close rates. I think that's where we should be spending dollars. So that's not quite an ABM strategy, but it does talk about marketing needing to modernize. And I think ABM, you're pointing out that some organizations are still maybe back in that prior century you're talking about.
Yeah, I think they pay lip service to it. But again, they're trying to evolve their businesses. But you've got, massive companies in the B2B space with which I'm, infinitely more qualified to talk about, who just can't pivot quickly enough to really incorporate the philosophy of ABM and still execute against these sort of legacy measurements. I do ultimately think that ABM will become more universally accepted in that marketing organizations will start looking at different metrics besides MQL, like revenue generated.
Yes.
That would be a really novel approach. Take credit where credit is due in terms of helping grow the top line instead of just generating leads that may or may not really have any yield downstream.
Yeah, good. Well, speaking of futures and people looking at the world a little bit differently than they have in the past, why don't you look into your crystal ball for us? You know, we've talked about where data has been, where marketers have been. Look forward a little bit for us. You got any audacious predictions as to where you see the future of data?
Oh, man, you had to throw that one at me. I think the answer that you really need to look at the nature, you know, of the data. Again, I'm going to be able to speak to B2B. I'm not going to be really able to speak to the B2C world, which is a fundamentally different equation. I think you're going to see, again, continued proliferation of lots of unique and disparate data sets over time, again, because of these low barriers of entry. They're going to continue to grow and expand. And I think, like anything, at some point, there will be roll-ups in that where they're going to have some of the larger data companies come in and see the value inherent in some of these nascent data products and do a series of roll-ups and start incorporating those data sets into more traditional delivery mechanisms. I think, you know, while the Silicon Valley spigot continues apace, I've seen it slow down somewhat in, you know, SaaS and data-specific SaaS companies, but that proliferation will take place, and like anything, there will be roll-ups in the future, and I think, you know, really interesting data sets will continue to be commoditized not long after they're introduced into the marketplace, simply because of the nature of a digital asset. It's very difficult to protect. It's out in the market. Unfortunately, that commoditization process. Speaking from the point of view of a data vendor, you know, that commoditization is a fact of life that needs to be dealt with.
Yep.
You're going to see a lot of interesting data products continue to come out. But again, at some point, somebody's come in and going to do a big fat roll up, I think, in the B2B space and put together some pretty compelling and broad scaled offerings. You've already seen it with some of the private equity guys, you know, gobbling up DiscoverOrg and, you know, ZoomInfo and those folks.
Yeah, so unique, valuable data, shorter lifespans, consolidation across vendors over time. And I think we're going to wrap up. How can people reach you if they want to learn more about HG Data or about you personally?
So I'm on LinkedIn. It's Don Wins, Donwynns. I'm the only one out there. Apparently my ancestors couldn't spell Wins, so they put an S on the back. That's how to find me. Or I can be reached at Don.Wins. at hgdata.com. We'd love to hear from folks who may have gotten some insight from the podcast.
Don, thanks for having you. And Paul, I'm going to send it back to you.
You've been listening to another episode of SLMA Radio with our show Data Dump Radio. One of the ever-evolving shows on the Funnel Radio Network for at-work listeners like you.